This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. If you enjoy this MPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone out there in the mighty Manawatu. I'm Cam.
And I'm Daniel.
You may know me from other such shows as Palmy Pride and Calling All Workers, but here today we're talking flatting today. That's right, anything to do with tenancies, housing, flatting, you name it, we will discuss it. So, here on the Manawatu's People Radio, 999 AM, Flatting Today is our show. We are also available on podcast. Simply put in Flatting Today in your podcast app or program you use, and you can listen to us on demand, even if you're going for a jog or having a late night party on Saturday night. Blast. Oh, my gosh. Thinking about that, how would that be, getting an antisocial behaviour notice for blasting tenants' rights, TED Talks around the neighbourhood? I love it. Don't recommend it, but I do love the concept and the idea. Oh, yeah. Actually just made me giggle inside a little bit. But alas, we are here today to talk about various different things. But we're going to kick us off with some beats. By that I mean, sorry, I'm getting the slang there, the lingo. Oh, beats. Yep. I mean music. So we're going to start off with a song by a gentleman called Rufus Wainwright. Here we go.
Love.
shining. I can't afford the lightning. Oh, where did the blue sky go? Oh, why is it raining so cold? So cold. Why does it always rain on me? Is it because I lied when I was 17? Why does it always rain on me? Even when the sun is shining, I can't afford the lightning. Why does it always rain on me? Why does it always rain on?
That was Rufus Rainwright. Can't rain on me. So this is a lovely song there to start us off. But we're going to talk about
co-housing.
Co-housing, yes. Or as it says here, Urban Habitat Collective. The Urban Habitat Collective is something in here, which is which got underway 4 years ago, aimed to build sustainable design, 7 floors, 22 units, apartment block for a co-housing community.
Yep, so all of these things are the different cooperative housing agreements. So, you know, a whole bunch of people living in the same area, you would jointly own most of the space. There'll be some shared facilities and you'd be private ones as well. So it's not quite individual ownership, but it's also not renting because you still own a bit of it. And it's not like you're all part of a company and you divvy out according to shares because it's the shared facilities as well.
So would it be body corporate model?
That is the closest we can make it.
Yeah.
I mean, part of the trouble with co-housing and cooperative housing is that there isn't any legal definitions or legislative support. So it's all like, we want to have cooperative ownership, and so we all have a piece of it, and we can all contribute, and, you know, we all agree on how it's all going to work out.
Yes.
If you have a problem, you're kind of stuffed.
Yes, and then therefore, in theory, then you're all equally responsible for, say, the elevator breaking. When it goes to repair, you all pay a portion of that elevator repair or whatever the alteration was or requirements are. I absolutely think it's a really positive idea.
Oh, yeah,
I think we need to have more focus on it. And I think the City Council have touched on it in one of their redevelopments, I think, around Papioa Place when they redid those flats, because they're also now looking at putting in a community facility so that all the tenants can go and do like a regular monthly mingle and and do that whole sociable space. So I think we need to, that's really good. I think co-housing needs to be a really good concept that we do. How would we protect people's tenancy rights in this?
So how co-housing and cooperative housing is generally defined is that you would pay to go into it, so you'd own part of it. So it doesn't tend to fall under a residential tenancy at all. And at the moment, in theory, you could probably buy into it and then put tenants into it, but it will depend on the agreement that you happen to have with the rest of the people living there as part of the co-op.
So essentially you're buying a right to occupy rather than actually owning, like I'm thinking about, I own my house that I live in and I own it and now I can do whatever with the bank, of course, it's mortgaged, but you're essentially, you'd be paying almost like what they do for a, not to take a crude step here, but what they do with a rest home where you pay for the right to help occupy that unit and then you live there until you don't want to live there anymore and then you can, someone else can buy that right to live in it?
At the moment, that's the closest analogy that we have. Yep.
Yep. Brilliant. We're on the same page.
Yeah. It's really big up in a lot of the Nordic countries. I think Denmark does lots of cooperative housing.
Yes.
And so one of the arguments that are often made is since you're not buying the house outright, your entire self, you can pool the money with multiple people, so it's not going to cost you as much to get into it. But then, of course, later on, you can still sell and make enough capital gains to get you into your own house, if you're that way inclined. I'm always more on the side of, let's just have all these different tenure options. It doesn't need to lead to individual home ownership if we don't want it to.
Yes, yes. And I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going into a co-ownership model with, say, a three-bedroom apartment and there's two of you going into it, then what does that matter? How would that be any different to two friends doing that as opposed to a married couple?
Yeah.
Same. In my mind, it's the same principle. And I think we need to do it. And I'm pretty sure there are some examples in the States where they've done that in some of the poorer areas. I feel like, you know, if you go into like Chicago on the south side, and I feel like New York, there's probably one or two examples in there. I'll have a look. I do feel
so.
It.
Yep.
Because bearing in mind, the building costs have gone up by 90% from $12.2 million in August 2020 to $23 million in February. You know, so like if you think about it, costs have doubled.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you were wanting to build a property or an apartment or anything like that, that's huge. And the problem is you've got your mortgage based on the rates now, or, you know, if you had got your mortgage last year and you're completing the project now and it's over budget, where is that money coming from?
Yep. It's worth a mention just as an extra wrinkle in the cooperative housing. Unless things have changed significantly, banks don't tend to like it because there's the joint ownership, so there's no way of assigning the debt to a single person. So often they would just not give a mortgage.
Yes, and I think, and it's really bizarre because I feel like Kiwi Bank are just starting to dip their toes in the water now with, I seen an ad on TV the other week around like, come and talk to us if you want to buy a house with your auntie so we can sort out how we can do it. So I feel like they're trying to get into that water but don't want to quite, you know, they're in the paddling pool rather than actually in the swimming pool.
Yeah, they're still very much in that side of here's, you know, a couple of people, but they're still buying just the one house to share amongst them rather than a great big massive complex among multiple people.
Yes, and so the article that we've shared on our Facebook page about this is, as well indicates that the problem is that co-housing is a not-for-profit enterprise and that there is no legislative model for it, which means lenders, councils and developers are wary of it, which is obviously because of that reason. And so the writer hopes that these obstacles can be overcome to enable collective housing projects as the country will benefit from what they have to offer. And I absolutely do it. And I mean, if you think about the model of what a retirement village is designed to do, say an example up on Summer Hill where you've got 20 individual units that everybody owner occupies it and then they go and meet and mingle and all that. But you can do that same stuff in an apartment building, how many more houses we could potentially have.
And, you know, in this particular instance, it would be, well, retirement villages are well known for basically gouging out people as much as possible. And a not-for-profit arrangement, just imagine how much more accessible these things would be.
It absolutely is. And it mind boggles that we can't do this, but we'll happily accept, for want of a better word, prize gouging and extortion with retirement villages. That's okay, but cohabiting housing model is not really weird. Just to let you ponder that one while we go to our next song by the beautiful Cyndi Lauper with Hey Now.
Come back in the morning.
Girls just want to have fun. So do boys. And the disclaimer of that, that was from Cindy Lauper. So back on our co-housing thing. So Daniel was talking earlier about what happens in Denver. So the quote from this is from the article was that co-housing originated in Denmark in the 1970s, where about 7 to 8% of the population live in some form of it, and the concept has been well accepted in other parts of the world, but has struggled to take hold in New Zealand. Why? Because for more co-housing developments to be successful in the future, there needs to be a legislative framework in place which supports communal ownership and development of land. And I think that is where we're getting the stumbling block, is we're not approaching our land development on a communal concept.
Yeah, and it's very much something that we definitely need to do, and it shouldn't take us this long, because if nothing else, Indigenous populations live communally.
and in all fairness, I actually see this as a really good opportunity for some of our iwi to utilise their land in a way that they can have a sustainable income source on a non-for-profit basis.
Yep.
And utilising their land to the capacity. Because, I mean, you imagine once you build a house on a piece of land, you can't really use it again. But if you yep. can use, you know, and centre it around your marae and have this whole co-housing model with a couple of apartments for your iwi and tribe, great.
Yeah, very much so.
Then you're connecting your family back to your actual grassroots and utilising a resource that you have really, really well.
Yep, and yes, you can have that connection into the land that is so easily lost at the moment.
Yes. Yeah. I really, really love this idea, because I also feel that whilst we're, quite self-sustaining, we also can't keep just building houses on our farmland, because where are we going to grow our food?
Yes.
And even if we take the whole agricultural concept out of it, you know, dairy farming and sheep and beef, and just grow our food and grains and vegetables, we still need somewhere to grow our vegetables. We still need somewhere to grow our soya beans and our other stuff. You know, like, so just actually a matter of getting rid of the farmland is not the answer either.
Yep.
I think up.
Yes, we definitely need to go up more at the moment. And yes, there are earthquake risks, but you can build to cope with those. I mean, Te Papa is a pretty good example. I mean, that's not going to be falling over anytime soon. It's pretty big.
No. And just on that, on the co-housing thing, could we do it by simply – so this article obviously talks about quite a big apartment building, but could we do it with medium-density housing?
Oh, yeah, it'd be no worries.
So it would be quite an easily – conceptual model to do it on a small scale for a few examples with medium density, and then go, this is how it's going to work before we go bigger.
I think part of the trouble in getting is, as I mentioned when I posted the article, this is not the first time that discussions on doing cooperative housing in New Zealand has come to pass. And each time it keeps hitting that hole. No one quite gets around to doing it because it's not big enough here. So it's one of those, if we can do it on a small scale, it seems like politicians at the moment are sort of deciding, oh, that's only little small things. We can let those be covered in corner cases. We don't need to do anything big about it.
And the thing is, it's already worked well in Denmark. So we can actually just emulate what's already working quite well within our legislative framework, and I think it would work quite well. So there's Granville Grayland. There are 20 units in the co-housing complex in Grayland. And looking at it, they look actually like I'd be quite happy to live in one of these houses by looking at the pictures.
Oh, yeah, they're perfectly normal houses. It's just the way that you share the ownership is the main difference.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's street development in Dunedin. So there are currently, more recently, Cohouse in Auckland, Grayland, and then the Chai or a high street development in Dunedin were successfully completed and now have residents living in them. So they are slowly coming online.
Yeah.
I just think we need to embrace it. And asking Te Kaha Co-Housing Neighbourhood in Golden Bay has managed to beat the odds and is on track with its three neighbourhood developments, although it is processing in stages. So it's obviously a significant amount of red tape that is slowing down these processes. And I just think...
As noted already, the whole getting a mortgage is very difficult, nigh on impossible, and all of those rapidly increasing building costs are definitely getting in the way a little.
and so this particular in the Taka co-housing neighbourhood in Golden Bay, they ran into a lot of problems. Other co-housing developments ran into but managed to work through them. One decision which helped was that they chose to go to a national board. So went to a national brand like Signature Home, so they did the building, which helped with all the contracts and stuff like that. But they also have a team of four people employed to do all the planning, make decisions and solve problems to ensure homes get built and everyone lives happily. So that's not only a social housing site that provides housing cohabitively, but it's also implying and providing employment for four people.
Yep.
And those four people could potentially live in that complex as well.
It's probably likely. I have no idea how they're going to arrange that one. But it, you know, it used to be, because of course, good old housing history, way back, 1970s, maybe 60s. I might be too far ahead. Anyway, it used to be that you could help all of your neighbours build a house and it would be cheaper price, and then, you know, they would help you build your house. And there was an entire scheme.
Yes.
It's very helpful.
Yes. I absolutely think we need to embrace it. I encourage people to, you know, talk out to people and accept an alternative model that works really well, cost-effective, can offer huge employment, and can be done. We just need to overcome the building constraints, which would be the same situation you would be in if you were just building a two-story house for yourself. So realistically, can be done.
Yes, and this one adds more opportunity to connect in with iwi and everything as well, which, again, we really need to do because New Zealand's been dragging feet on that one for a very long time.
Yes. But we are at that time of the day again, Daniel. We are out of time. We have picked a hot, juicy topic that provided a lot of conversation and question. So we're going to play out to our last song of the day by Colton Ford, Losing My Religion. You may know it by REM, but this is another version of it. So here we go, and thank you all for listening. Stay safe, keep warm, happy, healthy, and dry.
All the best.
Oh, life is bigger. It's bigger. That I will go to, the distance in your eyes. Oh no, I've said too much. I set it up. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight.
I thought that I heard you say
If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. NPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out npr.nz for more information. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.